Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt.
Tuesday? No, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, today?
And I'm sorry. I'm excited. Fuck yeah.
Wait, hush call. Since it's Tuesday and Wednesday, we need to do this for old time's sake.
Quiet, everybody. We're going on the air.
Turn on that radio and back it.
Good afternoon, friends of Radio Ranch.
What is the biggest thing since radio and I'm letting you in on the ground floor?
I don't know anything about radio.
Oh, but you don't have to.
What's radio, Mr. Peabody?
My God, this is coming through the air.
You know I detest the radio.
Yes, I know.
Holy transistors.
Buck, find the radio station.
If you were alone, you could turn the radio on and there would always be something to listen to.
A radio show has to give away things. Nylons, iceboxes, automobiles.
You mean to stay on the air, you have to give things away?
Very original broadcast.
Yes, good numbers. And it's tying them together with a swell adventure.
I told you to keep waving that radio.
You're going to dance?
Yes.
Oh, they can't see you dance over the radio.
Radio. Get the picture?
I'm smiling. Thanks, Stephen. Of course, that would be the intro to my show on Cast DAD, Carl's Music and Movie Emporium. But as I started to go crazy at the beginning, I'm absolutely friggin' just jumping up and down. Fuck yeah, twice. You know why, Stephen?
Don't tell us.
Okay, well, yesterday it was announced that Scream Factory was bringing out The Manitou, which is top five all-time favorite batshit movies of all time. Fucking great. And 5 minutes before the show today, what did you send me in Messenger? Which I just posted?
Yeah, they just really announced this. And this is one that no company has ever touched before because of its weird rights.
No one
knows who owns it.
It's really something. This is a special movie for me. This ran at the drive-in in 74, and nobody liked it but me. And I have championed this film as one of the most unusual vampire films, and they are bringing it out on Blu-ray. Is this Scream Factory again, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Scream Factory is bringing out Grave of the Vampire, starring Michael Pataki and B-movie icon William Smith. And let me tell you something. It's an odd little film. It doesn't go by the rules. And of all people, Abel Ferrara was very influenced by it when he made his movie The Addiction in the 90s. And he has trumpeted this film along with Del Toro. And who else did you mention to me?
Del Toro, Stuart Gordon.
Stuart Gordon. Yeah. Listen, you don't know this film? It is on YouTube, and it's on the ISF playlist. But it's coming out in Blu-ray, man. And if you like it, you should buy it. Abso-friggin-lutely. It's a great film. There you go. Thank you, Stephen, for that.
And I want to say, it's good that Scream Factory's putting out Candyman for the 40 billionth time on Blu-ray, and some of the more mainstream stuff they're putting out for the 40 billionth time on Blu-ray. But our money is our mouths, so please tell them we want more obscure weird shit, like The Manitou or Grave of the Vampire.
Oh,
remember that, it's that dirty green stuff that's going to get us more of the obscure shit. Not
yeah.
A poll, not a podcast, they don't mean shit. But that green stuff, that means shit.
Absolutely. And if you ever want to send the green stuff to us, you know, we're okay with that, by the way.
Yeah. Money talks.
I'll tell you one thing. We didn't really talk about the Manitou, but the Manitou is directed by William Girdler, who both Stephen and I absolutely adore. He gave us Grizzly, Asylum of Satan, number of films. And,
who wrote the book of the Manitou?
I forget who wrote the book. But basically it's about fake psychic and his girlfriend develops a tumor, but it's not a tumor. It's a reincarnation of a 300-year-old Indian mystic. And they bring in Michael Ancera, who's an Indian healer, to fight. And it just goes batshit crazy. And you got Tony Curtis, you got Susan Strasberg, you've got Burgess Meredith, all sorts of people in this movie. It's just insanely fun. I love this movie. So, yeah, they're both well worth it, guys. You definitely want to check them out and buy them.
And The Manitou is another one that Joel turned down for MSTK 3000 because the movie was good.
Well, you know, it is good, but it is crazy. It's fucking nuts, that movie. And it's beautiful. You know, Girdler lets them overact, but just holds them back enough that, you know, it's just that line between, you know, going over the top and not, and he just holds it really well. It's really well done. And a lot of fun. It's just so much fun.
And sadly, this was his last film and his biggest box office hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was scouting for another film right after this and died in a helicopter crash, if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
Yeah.
And
he's in the Tennessee Filmmaking Hall of Fame because he made his first films, Asylum of Satan, Grizzly, in Tennessee.
Yeah, but both of those films, both The Manitou and Grave of the Vampire. And I'll tell you, if you like your Hammer films and that, this just takes it to another level. And I got to really give a shout out to Michael Pataki for that film. B-movie actor, never a big star, but very solid actor, and he just fucking nails this role.
Okay, we're headed some of this, but guess what else Shout announced this week?
Well, I have no idea because I'm just like thrilled with those other two, so tell me.
Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires with both cuts.
Both the Hong Kong and the American cut?
Yeah, the British cut.
Yeah.
It's going to have the Seven Brothers Meet Dracula, which was Hammer's cut. And The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which was Shaw's cut.
Right. Oh, that's nice. Of course, which one do you prefer? I'm sure you agree with me on this.
Honestly, the Shaw Brothers cut, because there's more action and more plot into it.
I agree. The Shaw Brothers cut is the better movie by far. And the better cut of the film. That doesn't mean that the British cut isn't good, but it doesn't hold up to... It's just better. You're right, there's more action, more story in the Shaw Brothers.
And plus it has a new opening and beginning where the guy who they got to play did Dracula. I forget his name. It was supposed to be Christopher Lee. He's like on the screen for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden, poof, he turns into the bad guy from the Japanese film. And then after the end of the action of the Hong Kong cut, it shows Peter Cushing walk into the castle, and then poof, he turns back into Dracula, and him and Van Helsing has a fight.
Yep. And that might be a little confusing for people.
It is. Yeah. And also, was it last month where they announced the Chibis 2 Street Fighter sets?
Yeah, it was in December, for sure.
Yeah,
I think it was
they're putting out the Street... Yeah. They were putting out the Street Fighter collection and the Sister Street Fighter collection. And what does this have in common? Besides Sonny Chiba? This has... What was his name who died yesterday? His name's hard to say, but we all knew him as Junju, the main bad guy from the Street Fighter, Return of the Street Fighter, Sister Street Fighter, he was in it.
Oh, he was in a ton of Nikatsu movies, too. I mean, he, you know, I saw that, and I got to give a shout out to Tommy Retro, who's a friend of mine on Facebook and really knows his genre stuff of the 60s and 70s. And Tommy was the one that posted it. And so I want to thank Tommy Retro for that. Yeah, I couldn't think of the guy's name, but man, you look at his face, you know who he is. If you love, you know, Hong Kong and
if you really look at the setup, he is the good guy in the first Street Fighter movie.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not forget.
I mean, I'm sorry, but.
Sonny Chiba's a villain in that film. You know, or an anti-hero.
Yeah, he's a true son of a bitch in there. You have my money.
Yeah.
No, if you don't have my money, I'm going to sell your sister's ass on the streets. Just goddamn. And then they don't have his money. And he does it.
Yeah.
But yeah. He was in that. The two films of his that you need to see that pretty much not too many have seen and it makes me cry is Kenji Fukusaku's Shogun Sword or the Yagu Conspiracy or I forget the Shogun Samurai, which we know as The Fall of Aku Castle, a.k.a. the 47 Ronin, with Sonny Chiba and Kenji Fukusaku together.
Nice. Nice.
And he was also in Kenji Fukusaku's first masterpiece. He did films before that, but the Yakuza Papers was his first one that everyone agrees is a masterpiece.
Right, that's true. But yeah, you know, that's also a really good set that Screen Factory's putting out. Now, Arrow put them out. The Sister Street Fighters, not as good as the series. Not bad, but definitely not, you know, Terry Kazugi, Sonny Chiba. Well, come on, give me a fucking break.
The thing is the Sister Street Fighter films came out when Chiba was moving towards wackiness.
Mm-hmm.
If
honest,
you
want to
see how wacky Chiba can get
the
Executioner done by Tiro Ishii. That movie's just fucking wacky as hell. It's not the wackiest film they did.
I love that.
The wackiest
movie.
One is, have you ever seen Fantasy Mission Force, Carl?
That's not in the Kill Chiba set. No, I have not.
No, it's not a Chiba film, but this is the wackiest Hong Kong movie ever made. Jackie Chan and five other guys play the Kung Fu Force. that has to go rescue Winston Churchill, Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
And two other dead foreign dignitaries. And on their way to rescue them, they end up being stuck in the house with Gonsai all night, get into a bazooka fight a post-nuclear biker gang on its way to the ending where all of the people they're trying to save is being held on a stage where they spend 5 minutes doing balletic fighting and then real fighting.
Okay, what kind of drugs were involved in this movie? Because I think I want them.
I don't know, but there has to be. This is a jaw dropper all around, especially when you have a scene with Jackie Chan playing poker with ghosts.
Okay, that I like. You know, there's actually one of my favorite stories, like folktales, is The Soldier of Death, and there's a scene in that where the guy is playing poker with devils. You know, so yeah, poker. Always like poker scenes. I'm okay with that.
It's just crazy, but yeah, he died. And he died in December 2018, but we didn't get word of it until yesterday, as far as I know.
No, it was actually over the weekend. It was Saturday
yeah.
that I found out about that. It was my birthday, actually, I found out about that.
But he was such a bad motherfucker in the Street Fighter films that the producer's toy made Chiba bring him back for the sequel.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it's just been a weird week. The president's acting like a brat, and we had the Golden Globes. Best drama was Green Book. Best musical or best ensemble cast, which is basically their best picture, was Bohemian Rhapsody. And those two movies got me thinking about Concussion and the piece of shit that came out called Welcome to Marwin.
Marwin, not Marwin. Marwin. Okay.
And really, they just, putting them next to each other, they don't seem to have any connection, do they? A movie about a rock and roll band, a movie about a singer forming a friendship with a man while they're gone down south on a musical tour, a movie about the doctor who first tried to diagnose and give concussions to the NFL and they didn't care, and just they really don't seem like they have anything in. And a guy who gets beat up by four guys in a bar for no reason. If you watch the movie, they beat him up for no reason. And gives him brain damage. Those movies really don't have anything in common, do they? I mean, nothing.
You are wrong, podcast breath. Going back to my Karnak days with Johnny Carson. Basically, what you've got there is what you like to call whitewashing. Why don't you explain the term?
What they consider it is they make whitewashing as a term is making something white or like giving a role that's basically supposedly for a black man to a white person or a colored person to a white person. This isn't whitewashing.
Well, also, it's not only that. It's taking certain aspects of a character away that are important aspects. And of course, with Freddie Mercury, that would be that he was bisexual. Okay? And
yeah, the movie. Yeah, the movie glosses it over. I mean, they barely mention it, but they do not make it a part of Freddie. And I'm sorry, everyone of us real Queen fans knew Freddie was pretty much gay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
all except for my sister.
We didn't give a shit. Like,
hold on.
I was talking to this girl in high school about how I like Queen. We were talking, and the city goes up. He said, you know Freddie was a fag, don't you? Me, no shit. Just really, no shit. You sure? No shit.
The story I have is my sister was a big Queen fan, and she said at one point she wanted to marry Freddie Mercury, and I says, I have more of a chance to be married to Freddie Mercury than you do. And she, like, looked at me. She didn't understand that. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, and plus there was this joke I seen in the interview from him from 81 where he's with this reporter and he just casually says, I have a joke for you. How can you tell a faggot that sucked too many dicks? And the writer goes, I don't know. And then he just smiles and shows him his overbite.
You know, the thing is, you brought this out too. It would have been interesting in the film if, you know, they focused on the gay part of him, but also he was bisexual, and the quote, you know, bisexual / straight part, he was with one woman for his whole life. But when
yeah.
he was, you know, his gay proclivities was to mess around with as many people as he could. That would have been an interesting dichotomy to take a look at and how it affected his marriage. But do they even want to broach that subject? Of course not.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to go into what they perceive as detrimental personality traits. You know, being gay in this case. You know, we're just going to whitewash that and not even really mention it. Yeah, not a good thing. Yeah, straight wash. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, really. No one didn't care. I mean, basically, the way they should have done the Freddie part of his gayness would be make it more like a longtime companion.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing is how did that affect the band? You know, and I know it created some tension.
Yeah, it's not mentioned in the movie, but
yeah.
If you haven't seen it, go YouTube the video for I Want to Break Free. You've seen it, haven't you?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Well, every member of the band is cross-dressing as a tribute to Coronation Street of English soap opera.
Okay.
And MTV wouldn't play it because they considered it, you know, oh God, he dresses a woman. We don't want that.
I know.
And it basically killed their career in the United States. It caused so much harm to the career over here that basically Freddie gave up for a long time and just went home and just partied his ass off.
Yeah, that's a shame. But you know, the other movies you mentioned do the same thing. That was one thing you mentioned the football movie Concussion. The main character who was a doctor from, I think, Nigeria. I'm not sure,
yeah.
But an African country. Comes over here and notices this. He's working in Pittsburgh, and he was, as the story came out, you find out that he's gay, and that there was a bunch of anti-gay sentiment towards him because he was trying to change, you know, football's perception of concussions in probably the biggest fucking football town there is, and that's Pittsburgh. None of that is addressed in the film. There are many other things about that movie that were really whitewashed because the NFL stepped in and said, "You're not making another North Dallas 40. Fuck you."
And they would have to deal with what the head of the Steelers said.
Well, that's an interesting story because it's funny. Go ahead and say what you're going to say, and then I'll do a rebuttal to it.
Yeah. Do you want a cock-sucking faggot to tell you how to play your manly game of football?
Well, you see, that wasn't Rooney that said that. Okay, that's the whole thing. That's the goddamn... commissioner of football saying that to Rooney. See, that's the two things. That's the thing where some people said that was Rooney and other people said it was the commissioner, and the commissioner was well known for being anti-gay. So that, you know, again, all this is not in the film. And so that's why it's in this list that we compiled. Because it is definitely, again, straight washed, you know, and let alone that he had a wife in the movie, which he did not in real life, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, wonderful.
They want to make the characters accessible to the largest audience available.
Yep, let's get some white bread out. Absolutely. No nourishment, no thought involved. Yeah, exactly. You mentioned one other movie too.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to get into Green Book. Okay, so Green Book is up for an Academy Award. Well, will be up for an Academy Award, I'm sure. They haven't announced yet. But it's definitely up for the BAFTAs. And it won major awards. And it's the true story of an African pianist by the name of Don Shirley. And he hires this mafia guy, Tony Wick, to be a chauffeur down in the South. And so what we have here is basically a story that was written from the Tony Wick's characters. One of the writers was his daughter. And Don Shirley's family has really, like, raised the ruckus on how he was portrayed. And, again, what this does is it whitewashes or basically it's like the magic mafia guy who learns, you know, tolerance and that, and how the Don Shirley character in this movie learns to loosen up and be more accepted. And it's like one of these magic, you know, fairy moments where, you know, the little wand is hit and everybody just learns.
You're my best friend.
And it's also what I call a white guilt movie. Oh, we have guilt because we don't treat the blacks right. So here's a movie just for us. For us liberals to make us feel superior to the fucking conservatives. And that, you know, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah. And let me explain to you normal people what the Green Book was. It was a book published in the 60s, and inside was this subtitle. The Green Book, a.k.a. How a Black Can Travel Through the Deep South and Stay Alive.
Right. And actually, it predates the 60s. It goes back to the 40s.
Yeah. And it was like Rand McNally for black people traveling.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people forget, you know, like Jackie Robinson when he came into baseball. How he had to travel with the club, but he couldn't stay at the same place, couldn't eat at the same place. And so they even used, they mentioned the Green Book in that film. By the way, that's a film that is not whitewashed. And that's 42.
No. That's one of my favorite Jackie Robinson stories. Who was the white guy that was his best friend in the National League?
Well, he was really good friends with the president of the Dodgers, Branch Rickey.
Yeah, Branch Rickey, but not him. Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, he was friends with him, and Mickey took him to where he was staying in the town and had dinner with him. And the next day, he was heard to say in the bullpen, "That's bullshit the way they have Jackie Robinson staying where he is." They're like, "Why? Because he's black?" "No, because he gets to stay with a black family in a house, and he eats better than we do on the damn road."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My favorite scene in that film is the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. And it's played by the character who played Wash in Firefly. I can't think of his name right now. But he's all over the place. But, man, that movie starts out like a Disney film. And then this character comes on, and it's like turns into a Tarantino film because every other word is the N-word. And it's just, oh, my God, what did I walk into? It's beautiful. And that's what I say.
Yeah.
That movie is not whitewashed. It's ugly. And and Jackie Robinson isn't the saint either, that he isn't painted as a saint either, which is a good thing. He's human like the rest of us.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, Green Book is what I call the saintly white person who helps the Negroes rise from where they are, like the Help. Those have been films, when they go back now, they've even 10 years as a fucking slave. The saintly white boy who flies in from the sky to help the black man get free.
Yeah. And of course, the nice thing about that is it's Paul Giamatti. But, yeah. Again, a film that I feel is very, very much manipulative and not whitewashed, but in many ways take the opposite thing since it was a black director. It just focuses on all the pain and not, degradation of it. I felt it was extremely manipulative.
At least in Django Unchained, the so-called white savior character loses his shit and fucks things up even worse because he can't take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Green Book and them. All the movies, they cut out any gay parts of them because I don't think they want to deal with it. Heck, even the movie on Thomas Finland. If you know who he is, cool. If you don't, he was a gay fetish drawer whose drawings were so goddamn good in the way he drew bodies and stylings and stuff that if you look at ads in the 70s in the U.S., they take his style.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
His only bad problem was he was a fetish of people. He was a Nazi fetishist. He loved the way men look in the Nazi outfits with the caps and the shirts and all that. The movie totally covered that up.
Yeah. It, you know, I mean, each of these people, funny thing is, there is no artist that is perfect. And we all have our faults. And if you want something truthful, you have to include those faults. What was the other
thing? Most of us who consider ourselves artists are truly fucking crazy.
But you talked to me about how you also thought, coming to the U.S., that the subculture was way too out and not hidden enough for his taste, right?
Yeah.
They don't
bring that out either. You spent 40 years learning to be hidden, and then you come to this, and you're like, whoa, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's still a good movie, but they do tone down that little bit of it. Which I don't understand, because all of the Nazi symbolism in his work was transformed into the gay leather culture.
Oh, yeah. He had a huge influence on the gay leather culture. Unfortunately, I didn't know much about him until the movie came out. I had to do some research.
And what's funny is they considered his work porn.
It was certainly fetishistic.
Yeah, it's fetishistic, but 90% of them, there weren't any nudes.
No, but there were chaps. Come on. And stuff like that. And so
yeah.
I put that in the same ballpark as Betty Page.
Or Park.
You know, and whatever Claude did. Now, it's softcore, but it's definitely fetishistic.
Yeah.
But is it porn? No. No.
But, yeah, I mean, why take someone and make a movie and do a race? Like Bohemian Rhapsody, I finally got to see it and I fucking hate it. It basically just totally you take out the gay part of Freddie Mercury's story, you take out his sucking soul.
And I agree. And no, I have not seen it. I probably will not. And I'm not saying that Rami Malek doesn't do a good job, okay? You know, he's going to be up to
He does a good job, but it's the same reason that, what's his name, who did What Is America?
Sacha Baron Cohen
left the movie, because most of the movie is about how poor Brian Taylor and Roger things had to deal with Freddie's drug taking and gayness. There's even the scene where they said, you need to calm down, Freddie. You're starting to get too gay for our audience.
Yeah.
Do you think those of us who've seen Freddie in his fairy costume from the 70s with that fucking gigantic package of his did not know what the fuck is going up?
Well, listen, he definitely had female fans. No question. You know, I talked about my sister. But, you know, that was, you know, the females fell in love with him. You know, I don't know if at that time it was particularly in rural areas, which I was at the time, the whole idea of anyone being gay was foreign. So, you know, I mean, you know, his female fans went crazy. But anyone who,
yeah.
who understood what was going on could see it too.
And plus the end of movie at Live Aid, which basically cuts out three fucking albums and Freddie's death and the band's going on without him and the Freddie Mercury AIDS charity concert. That should have been the end of the fucking movie, showing the bit where all of the stars come out singing it.
Yeah, I agree. But it wasn't Freddie's story. We all know this, you know, that the script was being approved by Brian May and all the guys. And one of the big things that Sacha Baron Cohen decided to leak from the film was that it was going to basically have Freddie die at one point in the script. And it was all about them surviving that and going on. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
that script, he was going to die. It was going to be a 2 hour and 15 minute movie, and Freddie was going to die 1 hour in.
Yeah. No. Just fucking no. And that's
no.
not the movie,
no,
right
no.
Now, by the way.
Well, you remember they was going to do a biopic of Joan Jett, but they had her date a straight guy throughout the movie, and Jonah's like, no, fuck you, no.
No, and that exactly. Now that begs a question. Is there anyone you'd like to see a biopic on, but for it to be real? Who would you like to see as a musician with a biopic?
Honestly, Cohen.
Yeah, good choice. Good choice, and a definite. It's what.
And I know who. I put it this as a joke, and this is the fucking truth. Bohemian Rhapsody, with cutting out Craig Davis, is the same as making a movie about Harry Nilsson, and cutting out all the fucking drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not a joke. You know, Harry was known for his excess. Incredible excess.
Yeah, we
but
laugh
yeah,
about him.
You know, all you have to do is see Son of Dracula. Seriously. The stories is they had a cafeteria table 3 inches thick with cocaine for the crew. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever see the bit where Robin Williams was talking about filming on
Popeye?
Popeye.
Oh yeah.
He said we were having a coke off. He's like, one day I got this humongous line and just and snorted it all up, and I was like, I'm the best fucking coke sniffer here. And then he heard a voice from behind him and said, "Fucking amateur." And then this guy brought up a big giant mountain and he snorted it all in 20 seconds. And that's how I met Harry Nilsson.
Yep. Good God. Self-destructive son of a bitch, man. There are three people I'd like to see biopics on. He's one of them. Another one, which I fear I will never see a real one in my lifetime, is Frank Zappa, because now the Trust, they're all together now, and it's like they're gonna whitewash Frank, which is unfortunate. But the one I think that could be really interesting and would not be whitewashed would be the Kinks and the relationship between Ray and Dave Davies. That would be something. But those are three I'd like to see.
Well, you've seen the CBGB movies. How whitewashed, and the 54 movie. How whitewashed was those movies?
Oh, they were incredibly whitewashed. Now, I will say this for CBGB. At least, you know, they had Alan Rickman as Helen. And that was good casting. Otherwise, the script sucks. Yeah, it was whitewashed beyond.
There is a director's cut of 54 out there that is more honest and a better film.
Yes, I've heard that. I've never seen it, though.
And there's one scene where what's-his-name, Paul Rubel is watching local access TV and stuff, and he turns it on, and there is I forget what band it was. I want to say it was the Sex Pistols playing, and he just looked at his partner and said, "We're fucking dead."
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's a shame. Again.
Do you see that with a lot of movies and documentaries on the stuff that you loved back then, Carl? Is that they cut out the dirty edges, and that's what we love so much about them?
Oh, absolutely. I grew up in the 70s. And, of course, if you take a look at film, if you take a look at music or any of the arts at that time, it was relatively depressing and very, very cynical. And we were okay with people who weren't perfect. And none of our people that we loved did we consider icons in that sense. We knew they were human. That sort of thing. And to me, that's the most interesting part of a biopic, is to bring out the faults and what makes us human. And I'll tell you one that really did it well, which we haven't mentioned, is Ray with Jamie Foxx. That was a good one. That was a good one. Of course, talking about Ray Charles.
And Almost Famous.
Almost Famous.
Almost Famous.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
While he was filming this, one of the studio execs came up to Cameron and said, "Why can't you make what's his name from a Cream?"
Lester
Bangs.
Lester
Bangs. It's like, why can't you make Lester Bangs a nicer person? Because he'll come out of his grave and kick the shit out of me if I do.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, we love those things like that. That's all we talk about, But there's about 20 million new Queen fans out there. I feel sorry for them because they're using Bohemian Rhapsody as what is the true God story
Very
about Queen is.
Yeah. Now, reality is much more interesting. Trust me.
Yeah.
The one we haven't mentioned either. Hold on, Stephen. Hold on.
Go ahead.
We haven't mentioned either, which is probably the nastiest look at somebody ever done on film. And it's a biopic by the person who's directing it about himself. And that would be
All That Jazz.
You want something that's fucking brutal on his subject? Watch that. Good God.
There's even a scene where he looks in the mirror and says, "You're a no good cheating, philandering, drug taking, no good piece of shit." And you're good with that.
Well, I bring this up because there was something else that was announced this week that I'm going apeshit over. And, of course, we're talking about the new it's the new TV show. Fosse and Burton, Fosse/Burton, with Moon, the actor from Moon. Come on, Moon.
Yeah.
Green Mile.
Yeah, I forget.
Sam Rockwell. And I can't think of who's playing Burden, but it's a miniseries that's coming out, and it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And they have Sam Rockwell as Fosse, and that's good casting. This looks really good too.
Yeah.
So. And they better not whitewash that fucker, which I don't see how they can.
Honestly, there's two kinds of worse biopics. There's three. One is a hit piece, and that is a biopic made by someone who fucking hates their subject to rub their nose in the shit.
Right.
And two, there is a movie which I'll call Carl Making a Movie on Harry Nilsson, which is Carl is so much in love with his subject that in the end, no matter how hard he wants to, and I know he does, he couldn't make an honest movie about the subject.
But
he's too personally involved in
it. I wouldn't whitewash it, okay? There are some, just like we said with the Bohemian Rhapsody, that would whitewash the subject and put it on a pedestal. I don't think I could do that with Nilsson. I mean, I could appreciate everything he did musically, but you got to put in that the man was basically an asshole and a drug addict.
Yeah.
And got beat up by Pam Grier twice with John Lennon. Yeah. Yeah, you got to put that in too.
Yeah. Well, since we're here, the three worst biopics that I've seen because of how much it covers up the subject. Number three would be the Vanity Project that what's his name? Kevin Spacey did of Bobby Darin.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that didn't work. You're absolutely right.
Number two would be one that kills me because, as honest as he was in his comedy, he could not be that honest with his own story on screen, and that would be JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling.
Richard Pryor. Yeah, unfortunately. That one didn't work either.
No, he wasn't able to be honest about himself, even though he was able to do it on stage.
But not in a film.
Yeah. And number one is the movie about Janis Joplin that had fuck all to do about Janis Joplin.
The Rose?
Yeah, The Rose.
Yeah.
They portrayed her as a pretty woman. She wasn't. They portrayed her as a straight woman. She was bi, heavily leaning lesbian.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But I'll tell you one you're forgetting. And you got to go back quite a ways. You got to go back more than 70 years. The Cole Porter story, which was done in the 40s. And man, you talk about fucking whitewash. They didn't want to touch his reality with a 10-foot pole, with a 50-foot pole. Yankee Doodle Dandy actually is not nearly as whitewashed as Cole Porter. Cole Porter was gay. Not only was he gay, but he was into fetishism too. And much of his life was scandalous, was incredibly scandalous. And he got away with it because he was Cole Porter. And so what they do in the movie is he's married. You know, I mean, it's so false. Of course, you can't really complain you know, since it was the 40s and the Hays Code and so on and so forth. But you know what? If you have to whitewash that much, don't do the fucking movie. Seriously.
All right. Oh, and W.C. Fields and me.
Oh, that was bad. That was very
God,
bad.
Oh, God, yes.
In fact, the 70s had a shitload of those. Gable and Lombard.
Yeah.
You ever see? And I'll tell you one we're forgetting.
Gable and Lombard. Sid and Nancy was the 80s.
Right. But Sid and Nancy's a good film, and it's not as whitewashed.
Yeah, but it's still a fucking
much.
Shitty movie.
I like the movie, so there. But I'll tell you one.
Ariel was good.
Hold on. Goodbye, Norma Jean.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Misty Rowe as Marilyn Monroe. Trust me, does not work. Larry Buchanan, we love you, but no. No. I should not have done it.
The Great Tycoon.
Oh, that's horrible. Oh, God, that's horrible. Why are you doing this to me? And these are all basically 70s movies. I try to forget these fuckers. I got one for you.
The Babe Ruth story for the 50s.
40s, but yes. But I got one that's even worse. Oh, I got one that's worse.
What?
Che. Jack Balance is Che Guevara.
Oh, God, yeah. No, he played Fidel Castro. It was...
Omar Sharif?
Laurence Olivier.
No, it wasn't Laurence Olivier. There's no fucking way it was Laurence Olivier. Hold on. I'll find out. But Che is horrible.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, it's just fucking horrible. Hold on, I'll tell you in a second. I love the internet.
Oh, and I have to say this. If you watch any of the movies that we are talking about during this segment, we take no repercussions in the stomach distress and pain for you being dumb enough from watching movies that we are calling vile, unwatchable pieces of shit.
There we go. Omar Sharif and Jack Palance. I told you it was Omar Sharif.
Omar Sharif, yeah. It's getting bad.
Yeah, it's really, really.
The Assassination of Trotsky.
Oh, yeah, that one, too, is not good either. But Che is
good ones. Yeah. Now let's bring out the top three that we would like, that they need to see. For me, number three would be Bang the Drum Slowly.
That's a good one.
Number two, Brian's Song.
Mm-hmm.
And number one is a movie that every time that you talk about the NFL making a movie a puff piece, you always add, because they don't want another one of this.
Yeah, but that really is not a biopic by any means. That comes from a novel, and it's, and though there are real people in there and that sort of thing, I don't consider that a biopic. But I mentioned it, so go ahead and say the movie.
Yeah.
Go ahead and say the name.
Dallas 40.
Yeah, I love North Dallas 40, okay? But I don't consider it a biopic. 42, which I have mentioned about Jackie Robinson, is really, really, really good. I like Ray. I don't know if I put it top three, but I like Ray.
Cobb,
I really like. Pride of the Yankees, I really like, too.
Yeah.
Generally, it's like. I got one for you. There were a bunch of them. What's the one that Gary Busey did?
The Buddy Holly story.
That's really good.
Everyone is great, but the guy who plays the guy that sings Only Teardrops. Only Teardrops.
Warren Robinson.
Yeah. The guy who plays him, no, Jackie Wilson. The guy who plays Jackie Wilson in there is the best thing in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of decent ones out there.
Why are you not calling me out on my bias? You should.
Well, that's because I know you, and it's not going to work anyway, so don't worry about it.
Hey, I'll admit it. I'm biased. It's Paul Mooney, and he's fucking great.
Well, of course you are. Just like I'm biased, too. There's good stuff out there.
There's good and bad.
You know one I really, really like? Again, you could argue that it isn't biographical, but it kind of is. Is Immortal Beloved. I fucking love Immortal Beloved. Have you ever seen that? That's the one with Gary Oldman as Beethoven.
Yeah, that one's good.
Yeah, and that's directed from the same guy who did Candyman and Paper House.
Oh. Yeah, Bill Condone?
No. No, I can't think of his name right now. Again, I can.
Yeah.
I can find out.
Yeah.
But
Bernard Hughes.
Bernard Rose. Bernard Rose.
Rose, yeah. And let's not forget the best film that Clive Barker's ever been a part of.
Okay.
Gods and Monsters.
Oh yeah. Gods and Monsters is really good too.
Oh, and before we move on to the last little bit on the disabled stuff. There's one film that doesn't write this year. We had Bohemian Rhapsody, cover up the gay. Green Book, cover up the gay. And then we had a small little slasher film come out called The Ranger, where the director has a couple in there that's gay. And they don't make a big deal about it. They don't even really say it out loud until one of them gets killed and you see the other one crying over the other guy.
Right.
I'm sorry. The reason I'm making a big deal of that is that's been one of my wet dream fantasies, to see a gay couple in a movie and that not be part of their character.
You know, where it doesn't matter. It's just the way it is. Yeah. Absolutely.
But, yeah, we got another idiot that came out this week that said, what's the name of the movie with Bryan Cranston?
Hold on. Here we go. Give me a second. Here we go. Uncharted, the one and only. Electric Dreams. I'm not seeing it. It's The Upside. The Upside. That's it. The Upside.
Yeah. And before we get into this, I'm disabled all my life. Carl's disabled all my life. This guy said that movie is biased because it has a normal person playing a disabled person, and they should hire a disabled actor just because they're disabled.
Okay, what's interesting?
Hold on, Stephen. Go ahead.
What's interesting is that was Ben Whishaw. But Ben Whishaw said something to the fact that he hopes that you know, gay people could play straight people, and all this, and that should be the case. Well, you know, my thing about this whole thing that disabled people should play disabled people and that, you know what, or gay people should play straight, is you're an actor, and so you should, you know, by extension, be able to encompass all sorts of characters. And it's about who's the best for the role. Now, granted, I'm not dismissing representation at all. And if you find someone who's disabled, who's a paraplegic, who could play that role as good as Cranston, no problem. But more than likely, you're not. Okay? And let's keep that in mind.
I have a joke about what he said. Gay people play straight people. To me, I have like a fantasy. When he said that, Rock Hudson dug himself out of the grave, walked up to his house, knocked on the door, and when he answered, punched him in the mouth, said, "We've been doing it for over 100-plus fucking years now, you idiot."
And
back
then walks back.
Grave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that was stupid. Because they've been doing that for years. Hollywood, back in the 30s and 40s and that sort of thing, all of that was hidden. You know, Cary Grant was gay. Randolph Scott. You know, all these people hid that life. And, yeah, they played straight characters all their fucking lives. What do you think you do? Plus, why should it be an issue?
You know what, Carl?
What?
John Wayne was a fag. I'm serious. I used to work for a window installer, and I went to his house once to install some two-way mirrors, and he answered the door in a dress.
Okay, whatever. I don't fucking care.
If you have seen Repo Man, you'll understand that quote was from.
Yeah. I for a second I was going with Lenny Bruce, so it was Lenny Bruce, and I knew that wasn't right because Lenny Bruce is the masked man is a fag.
Yeah. But still. That's already been happening. If that becomes a cliche, all gay men in wheelchairs are rich and look and talk like Bryan Cranston. Hey.
Yeah.
And you should fuck them. Yes. Go ahead. Fuck them. They look like Bryan Cranston. Fuck them. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That to me is again, you know, it's the magic cripple guy. You know, that then teaches the Kevin Hart character how to be, how to fit into society and that. And, you know, that's another thing going back to the Green Book and that sort of thing, which I just shake my head. But, you know what, it looks like fun. You know, just don't, you know, take it as gospel. It's just a fucking movie. So, you know.
Yeah, to me, it will always be Brian Doyle Murray in Modern Problems with Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
They talk about him all through the movie. He's like, watch out. This guy gets all the pussy. If he gets near your girl, he's going to be fucking her within 48 hours. And then after all this talk, he shows up and he's in a wheelchair. And he pulls this fucking move. And he's fucking Chevy Chase's girl within 48 hours.
Yep. You know who you have to thank for that, don't you?
Who?
Who wrote and directed that movie?
Who?
Ken Shapiro. Otherwise, the Groove Tube.
Oh, nice. From what I heard, his idea was an R-rated movie, but then the Chevy Chase is a cocksucker syndrome took over.
No, that was supposed to be an R. Oh, absolutely, that was supposed to be an R.
That broke Ted, unfortunately, that movie. We're talking about Modern Problems, by the way. And he didn't really work in Hollywood after that. He never directed a film after that. He did some work on the Oscars for a number of years, but that's it.
Yeah. And do you remember the half-hour comedy hour that used to be on MTV?
Yeah.
That was Ken, too.
Okay, was that Ken? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. He was like the head producer.
Yeah, unfortunate. And he just passed away last year, too.
I don't understand this whole, if you have a black disc, you need to put a black person. This way is not going to work because it's already got, last year, filming a Deadpool 2, a woman dead because she didn't know how to do the stunt, but her skin fit the role.
Yeah, I remember that. And so they bored her into doing it, and she died doing the stunt.
Doing one where you take a motorcycle to go onto the car.
Yeah.
But no, we'd rather have a black woman play it than have someone that knows how to do the stunt and won't get killed.
Christ Almighty.
When your ideas of equality get someone killed just to make yourself sleep good at night, you need to rethink what your ideals are in this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this whole thing with Weishaupt, you know, Rupert Everett, who is an out gay actor, has been for years, he's played straight roles all his friggin' life. You know, and the thing is, as I said, and we've actually argued this with our dogs, I do believe in representation. But, you know, if you have a group of actors you work with that you're comfortable with and they you give them roles, I see nothing wrong with that. You know, but if you're doing Crazy Rich Asians, and you use Caucasians for it, then you're fucked. And you're stupid anyway. No,
yeah.
I mean, representation should work.
Like, and I'll make you brought this up, like the version of Black Man's Burden done in the 90s, except they reversed the role and called it White Man's Burden.
I don't even know that film.
What it is it's supposed to be a black janitor takes over a building because this white guy got him fired because he accidentally spilled water on his shoes. And it becomes a hostage situation. Except they changed it and Harold Belafonte played the black part and John Travolta played the white part.
Oh. Hmm. Yeah, that sounds racist as fuck.
Yeah, that movie did not fucking work.
Well, you know, I mean, if you're looking at shit like that, what about Soul Man? Good fucking God.
Oh, we're going to get into that. Probably not this weekend, because I've got Mark Savage, Aussie-sploitation director and director of Purgatory Road, which is coming out soon. But, yes, we're going to do a two-part episode on real racist films. Not this stuff. Some of the stuff they call racist now, they just makes me giggle like a little kid. It's like someone complaining that lukewarm water on their body is burning them. And I'm sitting there with water so hot that the devil's like, can I have that, man? We need it in hell.
Yeah.
It's
going to
end up with a watch of
what
some people basically what I consider the second most racist film of all time. We're not going to touch Birth of a Nation as a watch, not with a 40-foot pole. And we're going to be watching Fight for Your Life. Yeah, we're going to go there. And wait, before we do this, Carl Kafer and anybody at the Deviant Legion programming has nothing to do with this. This is all my fault, so don't blame him.
Even though I said that I owned the film, you know, I did admit that. I do own the film. But is it racist? Oh, fuck yes. Without a doubt.
So, after that, we're going to be talking about real racism. Not this candy-coated stuff that you call racist movies nowadays.
It's interesting. William Sanderson was on Newhart as one of the three comic characters on the Newhart. And he was so afraid they would fight for your life that he would get fired for having done that in his past. Yep, that's how racist this movie is.
Yeah. And do you have anything in the pipeline in the future?
Actually, the Legion. Tomorrow, Christoph has got a show going on. I forget exactly what it's about, but we've got a show on Thursday and Friday. You will be joining me along with a special guest. And I just got confirmation on that today. And we're going to be doing singer-songwriters. And what we're going to try to do is pull together a playlist along with the podcast. So that'll be a two-part show. And we still have to work a little bit on that. But we're going to be talking about singer-songwriters. And by that, I mean those songwriters who sing their own material and basically are more of the folk style. But, you know, it could be anyone. It could be a Bruce Springsteen, but it's not a group. It's not like Ray Davies and the Kinks. Do you want to mention a couple people that you're going to be focusing on, Stephen?
Well, I've got the College Snob crowd links just locked up because I've got Tom Waits, Warren Zevon, and Leonard Cohen.
Mm-hmm. And I've got Loudon Wainwright.
The Rock and Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Blues.
That would be UE Piano Smith. Loudon Wainwright III, Randy Newman, and Harry Nilsson, who of course we mentioned earlier in the podcast. And also think of a female too. You want to add on to that too. I would probably add on Janis Ian to that.
And I'm adding on Patti Smith, but I don't know if I can name the song.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. But anyway, so we're going to be doing that. Doc definitely has a show on Sunday, but I'm not sure what's going on there either. We're a little discombobulated because of the new year. So forgive us. We're not as organized as we should at the Legion. But that's what we have coming up here soon.
Okay. And with that, we hope you enjoyed it. And please, to quote Mr. George Clinton yourself, free your mind and your ass will follow when the colors of the universe will be open to you.
Absolutely. You know, in other words, shit the rainbow, people. All right? Good night.
Bye.
To all praise. Hush. whole for that. And for downright real people, I want you to listen. Be what you are. And be the very best of what you are. Whatever your thing is, make your own self a star. When y'all see me riding around here with gold handles on each one of my doors, they have the nerve to say that motherfucker is pimping whore. You call me a liar, a thief. Son of you even call me a freak. Then you say that motherfucker done got on top. He must have done it by eating cock. But if all of that that was done behind closed doors was brought to light, there'd be a whole lot of cocksuckers and dick lickers and freakish motherfuckers sitting right out here tonight. So what have you got to take, and what have you got to give? As long as I live the life that I love, because I love the life that I live. But furthermore, if you'd stir your finger round up in your own pot, you would be too damn busy trying to find out what kind of dick that I've got. So I'm going to live for today, because I'm not promised tomorrow. I want plenty of good loving and less pain and sorrow. So I'm going to keep on living and being what I am. And I'm going to be the very best of what I am. And for those who don't like it, confidentially, I don't give a damn. Because I live the life that I love, and I love the life that I live.
Good night, everybody.